Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
On today's episode, we're going to try again after John actually presses the record button.
It's a real thing that happened, by the way. Yeah. We're not joking. We did this entire cast.
Entire cast. I looked over my shoulder to make sure it was recording, saw the red button, thought it was recording, and realized afterwards I never pressed said red button. Have I gotten up four times to check the red buttons and pressed? Yep. Am I going to check more times during the cast?
Have also, yep. Have we been talking for 1 hour and recording the entire conversation?
Just to make sure.
Does any of it have to do with 40K? Yeah. Absolutely.
Good news for all of you is our second round is usually better than our first round.
True story.
So there we go. All right. So before we get going, as always, please follow and leave a positive review in the cast. It is actually really pumping our audience. I think we're over 500,000 downloads now. It's Spotify's recommending us all over the place. And that's really just because you guys say like and then you listen. So thank you for doing that.
Please like. One of the big things, leave a comment. It actually is great for the analytics. It puts it out to more places for whatever reason. Yep. I don't know how it works, but talk about us and that would be great.
The nano machines of Spotify.
I don't know. The nanotechnology.
Nanotechnology. So with that also, other thing too is in the show notes, there's a link to our Discord as well. If you haven't joined it already, please join the Discord. Again, totally free. It's just a great repository for us. We're getting a lot of both positive feedback, but also really good constructive criticism in there. Some of the changes we've made to the audio balancing came out of there. There's also a really good community in there. It's so far been really, really positive. A lot of people coming in with, hey, this is my favorite literature. This is my favorite topic. Can you guys cover it? But also talking to each other and saying, hey, has anyone else read this? Is anyone else, hey, I like X. Does anyone have a resource for me on more of it?
I want to throw it out there for people that are also hobby people. Hobby people maybe looking to get in the game, or either one, not even looking to get in the game, but just loving to do the hobby. We've got channels for that, and people are very supportive. Also, please, if you're in the Discord or you're joining the Discord, throw up your mod. I love seeing projects.
Throw up your models. Show us what you're working on. I was about to say, later tonight, I'm going to put up photos, but it'll be like a week and a half ago. I'm going to throw up some pictures. I'm playing tonight on my new board where I redid all the terrain or playing someone. So I'll be some photos up tonight of that.
I love the journey. I love journey picks. Do not give a shit if your models are the best painted, the worst painted, the whatever. I really do enjoy it. And I know it's cheesy. So I say it, I just like the journey.
Exactly. Also, there's a link in here for our Patreon. For those of you who's joined our Patreon, thank you. We're talking to you via new microphones.
Via Patreon.
Yeah, via Patreon things. This is stuff we're doing. Our Patreon is simply, it's your choice. Sadly, we don't give you anything for joining our Patreon other than a thumbs up behind the scenes. If you are looking to play 40K at any level, Brad is a 40K coach. He does everything from, I've never played this game in my life. Can you make it so I don't embarrass myself on day one? All the way up through, I've got a 600-person, 5-day event coming up. I'd like to win it. Can you help me out? Brad covers all those areas. He's a very, very good coach. The luxury of playing the game for 30 years. He knows it pretty well and being one of the top players in the game, actually. So it's not just you've been playing it for a while. There's a lot of people who've done that and haven't been top 5 ITC.
I've been doing stuff.
Exactly. So if you want to reach him, you can email him at
oldman40k@gmail.com.
Or go to our website and click his link. Anyway, on to the elder.
You know what? I think that most people are typing in what I have said.
I am sure they are not.
I need to know that.
I have to get a hold of Brad, old man. There's a lot of people with Gmail addresses who've gotten very random emails. I've been very confused by.
I'm going to start just putting my IP address up.
And see. Exactly. Yeah. It's 172.19833. All right. Anyway, on to the Eldar. So as we said in the last cast, the Eldar are one of the first playable races in the game. And that means that from a lore standpoint, I believe they're number 2 to the Space Marines.
This is in the 90s, early 90s, if you're going to go down. No,
late 80s.
Oh, well, yeah, they were always, I forgot about this.
We would say late 80s, it's 89.
It's 89.
But it still counts. Yeah, it made it into the 80s.
In my mind,
they wore Technicolor sweaters.
Rogue Trader was first. But when I think 40K, I of course think when I started playing, which was second edition.
Yeah.
But second edition was 90, I should probably look at the screen.
94.
Yeah.
So the second edition came out in 94. So if you started in second edition, you had been playing in the late 90s. It's actually when I was playing. I played right at the start of second edition.
I do want to throw out that between both John and I, if you play us and you're a young lad, I have models on the board frequently.
Yeah.
That are older than my
I have a number of, it's only my Imperial units, but I have Imperial Guard units that are older than most of you.
I have Metal Eldar that is over 25 years old.
I have an Eversor Assassin that I believe I bought right around 94. It would have been right around that era. I'd have to check, but yeah, he old. Anyway, speaking of the Eldar line, the Eldar line in this regard actually falls in the same category of they have not changed very much.
Give me some new scopes, Judy. You know what? I'm taking that back. I'm gonna call them up and I'm giving props. The new scopes they're doing for the Eldar are spot on primo. However, the same commercial that I see in a white dwarf from 30 years ago has the same, I would say striking scorpion, but they just got a new line.
Warp spiders.
The same warp spider.
Shining spear.
They're all the same. They changed the base.
Warlock, Barseer.
Come on, man.
Wraith. Oh, no, the Wraith Lords did change. They changed. That's right. Yeah. When writing the notes for this, the way we write the notes for the cast is I pull the old codexes. So I'm looking at second edition codexes and I'm looking at images of here's how you paint your army. And I'm looking at the closet behind me going, that's the same model. Although the one I have in the closet is at least resin, so it weighs less. Like, this game used to, you'd be able to harm people with this game. Like an old,
all metal, baby. Beautiful days.
All right, but let's dive into the Eldar. So we'll start off, what is an Eldar? Because we should have covered this in the first one. So Eldar are just, they're elves. It's Tolkien elves, but with a little bit of a twist. Tolkien elves were shorter. In the Eldar are actually taller than humans.
They're taller.
That's it.
They're taller and thinner, but they're not weaker. They're actually stronger and faster.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I forgot. In Tolkien, they are a little bit weaker. They're more accurate. Yeah,
the
Eldar are superior. Let's just call it what it is. They're taller. They're stronger. They're not faster.
They're not more durable though. Like they're wildly not more durable.
Yeah, are they? I mean, his thing. Then a guardsman.
Well, when I talk Imperium, I don't talk us.
That's what I'm getting at. That's only I'm getting at. It's like I hear you, but like
true.
Versus the Space Marine.
If you went Brad versus random Eldar,
yeah,
I would get tooled up quickly.
That's all I'm getting at. And kind of to that end, let's talk about the Eldar physiology. So some of this, as anytime we talk about how GW writes physiology, any of you with degrees in science get sad.
Yeah, well, there are people about to be mad at us for just saying.
Some of this is just quotes. The Eldar heart beats at twice the speed of a human's. Now, is there lung capacity different?
Which would have to be.
Which would not mentioned. How about their, well, you did mention the brain a little bit. But anyway, according to the GW, this allows them to move at basically impossible speeds.
They move at Anne Rice vampire speeds almost.
Yes.
And the biggest thing is that one of my favorites is in the codex that they talk about Inquisition seeing Eldar, talking to Eldar.
Yeah.
And their movements are disconcerting. They move so fast and so precise that it actually puts you at unease.
At unease. The example I liked within one of the codexes said that watching an Eldar move at full speed is like trying to watch the wings of a hummingbird move. It's just visually, we can't do it. Does that translate to the tabletop?
No.
Well, we'll talk about it. Sometimes it has. Yeah. So we'll get into that in a little bit here. But
I want to go into, because it goes into the fall. So
yeah.
We want to talk about physiology, but also the Eldar mentality.
What I want to dive into a little bit, though, is with the Eldar physiology and the way that they move, like the speeds they can move at, the accuracy they move at. It's kind of funny. The stories get kind of funny around this, because Brad's made a really good story about the Inquisition talks about like watching the Eldar move is unnerving. The Eldar write the same things about the humans, but in a negative. It's the viewpoint of like, hey, is every human injured? Like, why would they walk like that?
One of my things is, if you've seen The Ring, when she gets out and she moves all crazy, but she keeps paws moving, that's pretty much how Eldar feel that humans move.
And by humans, we mean like Space Marines. And I'm talking like a guy who's at the bottom of a hive city. We're talking about like a Space Marine. They're like, why are you walking like that?
So like, are you injured? Like, you should get help for that.
Yeah, don't you guys have doctors? They should fix it. So with that, the Eldar physiology, though, is a little extreme. And by a little extreme, I mean they actually can jump higher and farther than Space Marines. They can move at speeds Primarch struggled with.
Well, this is where we get to the end solitaires, things of yeah. that nature. Where is my armor better? Absolutely not. Does anyone touch me? Absolutely not. Yeah. I'm doing Matrix stuff yeah, you against your bullets.
And Matrix is a good example. That's how the Eldar move. And the Eldar, for once, GW didn't rip that off because Matrix came out after the Eldar.
But it's a big thing on this. But that's everything about Eldar is extreme.
Yeah.
In their mentality, what they do. And we're going to talk about aspects.
Well, yeah. And I think talking about aspects in the next test, but like the area I just want to really dive in on Eldar here, because it's going to get into a point I'm going to make in a second here. In the lore, there is nothing in the universe, barring maybe an orc war boss, who could stand toe-to-toe with an Eldar in hand-to-hand combat. They are so fast, so strong, so flexible, so perfect.
Wait for it, though. And two other things, because they're cheating.
Yeah.
One's not cheating. One is they put in hundreds, possibly thousands of years of practice.
Yeah.
Of practice. So, of course, you're better than everyone else. And here's the cheating part. They can kind of Jedi see in the future.
They can say those in the future. But so one thing about the Eldar is that piece of in the lore, some stuff we're going to talk about here is you're just like, wow, they really couldn't lose to anything other than Slaanesh. Honestly, yeah, that's how it was written to be, is this idea that the only reason the humanity even exists in the universe is because the Eldar have lost too many people to do anything about it.
They're basically,
the Necrons are actively hiding from the Eldar.
The Eldar Empire was, I'm going to, again, date myself on this, Elric, and I'm going to screw this up because Melibonian, Elric was Stormbringer.
Oh, yeah, there we go.
His race was, that was the Eldar.
Yeah.
They are the race that dominated the entire world and then just kind of went and hung out on their island, which Eldar kind of hung out in their section of the galaxy, and just went, we conquered everything. Everyone serves us. And people didn't even know they existed effectively. And we're like, we rule everybody. And they're like, we don't know who you are. Like, but if we wanted to go over there, we could.
We could.
And you're like, but are you?
You're not going to, right?
You're like, so I'm going to keep doing our thing.
One other little fun piece about the Eldar that I do enjoy is the Eldar obviously are very touched by the warp, to say the least. And the challenge with this is that they don't communicate just by voice, but via everything.
Well, because they understand. Legitimately. So Eldar, tiny things of body language speak volumes for an Eldar.
Yes.
Just their position, how they're sitting, whatever. They expect you to also understand everything about their tone, their posture, how I said it, the volume, and not a volume of yelling, just a slight
little inflection. Bits of pitch and inflection.
You should
the world.
You should clearly understand.
Anyone who speaks Mandarin actually understands this really well. Yeah. Mandarin has this problem where they'll say something to someone and they're like, did you mean this? No, obviously I didn't. Like, but where this gets to be funny is that the Eldar, because of this, they can communicate very, very quickly with each other. They can, what would take us multiple paragraphs, they can say in three or four words, but using body language and what have you. The Eldar forget a lot about that they can't do this with humanity. So there'll be some sort of like chaos or Xeno incursion coming down on humanity. The Eldar will rush over to tell humanity about it. And after 5 minutes of trying to explain something that should have taken the Eldar 30 seconds, they realize it would take them 2 hours to explain to humanity, and they just decide to just kill all the humans there along with the chaos. It's just easier.
Or not even that. They'll just let the fight happen.
Yeah, and just like,
and then kill whoever's left.
We'll deal with this after the fact. It comes up a lot.
We should circle back to the brain. The Eldar brain is significantly different.
The most important part about the Eldar in modern 40K is the path that they're on. And the reason they're on the path is because of the way their brain functions.
Which is very, very different from humans. Because while the Eldar are precise, they do all this. Mm-hmm. Also, the Eldar, effectively, were supposed to be poets, sculptors, the philosophers, and they became warriors. But the Eldar they feel everything. They've said in multiple books, they've said this 10 to 50 times more in loss, in joy, in whatever, which is why you had pleasure cults, which is why they get so driven to be the best sculptor, warrior, torture, whatever it is.
Yeah, a lot of that.
Yeah, I'm just saying, like, they're looking to be the best, but they also get, there's OCD, and then Eldar go, hold my beer. Yeah.
The Eldar,
then there's Eldar.
They feel pain when they fail at something.
And they can't let it go either.
Yeah.
If there's a failed thing, they have to finish it, and they have to finish it in a painful, also, I have forever to know that I didn't finish this.
Yep.
And they'll do whatever it takes to do that. And because of this, again, they broke the sky. My bad. We have the paths, which are the Eldar leaders, the Eldar scholars saying, we need to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Let's dive into the paths. So at the core, the path is a result of the fall of the Eldar, where the Eldar realized when they just chase their own impulses and their own desires, they have a tendency, oopsies, to go a little bit extreme.
A little?
Yeah. The problem is that the Eldar, that is their natural state. The Eldar need a direction. So they create what they call the path. And the path is you decide to become specialized. But by specialized, we mean like you become a specialist is probably the better way of saying it than saying specialized.
And the thing is the path in the game, obviously it's the path of the warrior.
Yeah.
But Eldar society isn't just the path of the warrior. Eldar society could be, and we talked about the last time we recorded, but the biggest thing is like you could be a specialist in the guy that literally cleans.
Yeah, we're going to do that.
No, we are. But I'm saying that it goes into everything. Mm-hmm. So I just want to point out that everybody thinks that the path of the Eldar is only.
Oh, no, warriors. There's numerous paths. And the idea is that when I'm on the path and my goal is to be the greatest, and we're going to go through some paths in a second, the greatest, whatever it is, that keeps me from falling to my impulses or chasing this endless, what is basically a descent into decadence. Cause when the path I'm on is not a path of decadence. It's a path. It's a pursuit of
something that benefits the society. Because if I just leave you alone, you will obsess on something. Yep. And that something and might that something be
might,
terrible.
Might be really shitty. Yeah. So
again, we broke the sky. We're trying to not do it again.
A key thing on the path though, is that the as much as we talk about Eldar being OCD, the paths do for most Eldar have a completion point. We'll talk about the ones who don't in a sec, in a little bit. But yeah, the idea is that I would join one of these paths and I would do it until the point that I have decided that I have achieved the path. And Eldar aren't lazy. So when they say they've achieved the path, they've achieved it. And then because you're living thousands upon thousands of years, you would then pivot to the next path. That's the normal thing. So when we talk about a path, once you decide to be like, the first thing we'll do is a path of the artisan, you will not be an artist likely for your entire life. It could be.
But the funny thing about that is there's supposed to be a completion and then you're supposed to learn something else. And that is what Eldar is supposed to be. Mm-hmm. The problem is if you become too good at your path,
then you never leave it.
Exactly. Yeah. Then you, not only are you probably not going to do it your own self, but other people won't let you because you become too,
you're
and it doesn't
greatest.
Matter. Yeah. Whatever you were doing, if you become the greatest at it, Eldar are like, sorry, you're too good to leave.
You're too good. Hey, this is what you do now.
Yeah.
So let's dive into some of the non-combat paths for a little bit. So the first one I would talk about is a path of the artisan. And this one's important, I think, because
this is my favorite, actually. One of my favorites.
Yeah. Well, I find this one really, really critical because when we talk about the Eldar fell because they were chasing decadence and all these things. Why? Because they were actually, before they were uplifted by the old ones, they were poets and artists. And that has never left the
Eldar. They were the best poets and artists.
Fair. That never left the Eldar. And what happened was, even post-fall, despite the fact they're in a constant state of hellacious war, they still have a need for beauty. Oh. And a need for the things. And that's what the Path of the Artisan is designed for.
Just in everything about Eldar. I think this needs to be said. And the Path of the Artisan is so important because when you look at Eldar armor, Eldar weaponry.
Oh, yeah.
The Eldar just day-to-day, what their ships that are supposed to be made for a constant state of war are still, again, they think that everything the Imperium does is a nightmare.
Yeah.
Everything we create, they're not making fun of it as like, oh, you guys make bad stuff. No, they think that must be a torture device. Yeah.
And we say that we're talking about like Imperial cathedrals.
Yeah.
They walk through an Imperial cathedral and they're like, why do you hate everyone who comes here? What is this, a prison?
Yeah. And the thing is that Eldar, again, because they're psychically resonance with everything, everything in Eldar society, ships, everything, you basically have interaction with everything. You can feel everything from the wall to the structure to the weapon to whatever. You have a sense of interaction with this. I can sense that because all of their things are made. Well, we'll talk about more later, but Wraith, the Wraith Bone. You know what I mean?
It's all sung and created. So that's why the Path the Artisan is really critical within the Eldar community, because it does. It keeps them, the people on the Path the Artisan make everyone on the other paths happier.
Yes.
That's what they do.
Because they tell them this is our, even your structures. You walk into an Aspect Shrine. We have a whole podcast about this, but you walk into a warrior shrine and it is the most beautiful thing you've ever seen in your whole life.
The next one, though, actually, I like a lot is, because it's one I hadn't thought of until I read the Codex. Like, of course, they'd have a Path of Command. In order to lead the Eldar, you need to, it's not just a like, oh, Eldar Tim has been here through a few battles. We'll pop him in charge. No, every commander, this is, and leaders on multiple levels, you can be, you could also be leading other paths, don't forget.
Eldar do not, I don't even know if they have the word for nepotism in Eldar.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're on the Path of the Command, it is a hard
path. This is it, because it's incredibly important path. You are on the Path of Command. You are overseeing the survival
of our race,
of your race.
Yeah.
And so these are, I was going to say they're the most committed, but they're not. They're all equally committed to their paths in all candor. But the people on the Path of Command, their goal is to be the kind of leader who never makes a mistake ever. Has the nothing but the full support of the people behind them. They're amazing.
And they don't get put into this. The Path of Command isn't like you went to a school for a couple of years and now you're in command. No.
No, you went down the path.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. This, again, you're a wildly long-lived race.
Yeah.
So they don't go, hey, you did well in the last 5 years. You're like,
Well, you're in your freshman year and they're giving you command of a squad. It's like, oh yeah, how long have you been on the Path of Command? 750 years.
Exactly.
Okay, we're going to do a mild incursion over here. We'll let you lead these three people.
Because they take this... Yeah. Well, they take all of it very seriously. Eldar are very serious. But one of the big things about Path of Command is they know that they... And they're very serious about the fact that they think that these people are in charge of the survival of our race.
Yep.
So they don't give any chances. Yeah.
So when you see an Autarch on the board... That's why he has those rules.
Yeah. He's gaining CP. He's doing things.
Yeah.
Because of the fact that, oh, yeah, this guy's been in training for, so many human lifetimes before he was given in charge of anything.
Another one that I like a lot is the Path of Service.
Oh, this is fantastic.
Because I refer to it as, ditch diggers. These are the ditch diggers, the janitors, whatever it is, the maintenance staff of the Eldar. Except the difference is when these guys dig a hole,
it's the best hole that's ever been dug.
You would cry at the beauty and the perfection of the hole that they dug.
One of my favorite things to think about, because the term Exarch, we're going to say like a lot. An Exarch means a person that has, I guess, perfected, but he is now, there's no other path.
The term they use is they call it fallen to the path. An Exarch is someone who cannot leave the path.
Right.
For whatever reason, they just cannot see a life outside of this.
But there's Exarchs effectively in every path.
Yeah.
So the guy that cleans, and he cleans so well.
There is an Exarch janitor.
Yeah. And he's so awesome. Yeah.
And it is
that people are just like, I don't even understand what just happened.
Yes, but like, this is nothing's ever been this clean, this anything. And again, these people think about like none of the Eldar function without this too. So I also want to point out like there's no tiers in the paths. Nope. No one's like, oh, your Path of Service.
They are.
Oh, thank God he's here. Thank God it's the idea. If we didn't have enough people who were on Path of Service, they'd be saying, hey, can more of you go down this path because it's so helpful? Yeah. And everyone here loves
their job. We're going to circle back to this. Eldar do a fantastic job of Eldar and Eldar interactions.
Yeah.
And then we'll continually go back to, and also their dicks.
Horrible dicks. Last one I kind of want to touch on is the Path of Savant, which is also really a funny one to me. This is the last of like the non-combat Eldar paths. The Path of the Savant are the scientists, engineers, and historians of the Eldar.
Which historian is fantastic, and they do this. Yeah. But also the Eldar historians will rewrite their history. We won't.
We're not diving into. And also, I'm always like, Black Library. I'm not sure how many Eldar historians there are.
Well, they try to. But the biggest thing is this: and the Eldar scientists. The Eldar scientists are actually working with shittier technology than they had before.
Yeah,
because they don't use their full technological abilities because
they can't use the warp.
Oh, yeah. Because we broke the sky, well, we used to be able to just think about something and that created.
But
that is a real thing. Also, people that want to say this and you know, you read some of the lore, old Eldar would legitimately make reality happen.
Yeah.
By effectively thinking about it.
If old Eldar had really known Slaanesh was coming, they would have been able to kill Slaanesh before.
Like quickly.
Yeah. One of my favorite stories, though, about Eldar scientists, and we'll cover this more in a later cast, but there have been a few examples of the Admech getting a hold of Eldar technology, trying to replicate it, and the Inquisition has to get involved pretty quickly because of they couldn't replicate it correctly, and now there's a full-blown demon incursion or a planet has ceased to exist.
100% of all old Eldar technology, it used to be, how did the coffee maker work? I cast a magic spell, and then the technology worked. In all things that they did.
I love reading stories of the Admech's interaction with current Eldar technology.
But they also don't realize that every time I push the set, I want dark coffee. And you're like, you just clicked summon the warp.
Yeah.
And you're like, but I pushed dark coffee.
I pushed dark coffee.
Sorry, that's what happens.
That's what happens. Yeah. It's like you had to press it while kind of with your back in a certain angle. Otherwise you get possessed.
Everyone knows that when you're making dark coffee, you do a protective ritual also.
Otherwise, of course it's going to summon Scarbrand.
Everyone knows that. Yeah. Next thing you're going to say, you made two cups of coffee. And that's a different protective ritual.
Now, one thing before we dive into the warrior path, which is the bigger one, is that no matter the path you're on as an Eldar, you are always a guardian. So the Eldar have two levels of military, effectively. The level one is their militia, which every single member of the Eldar, every living Eldar, is trained in the ways of battle. On the tabletop, they're called guardians. Also in the lore, they're called guardians too. But they are taught how to fight, and they fight almost as well as a space marine. For the record, they are incredibly accurate, incredibly good fighters. This is not like your overweight uncle who's in a militia on the weekend.
Let's also talk about the fact that not only these are very long-lived, but just like elves in all of fantasy, the Eldar don't need to sleep like we do. They sleep. They basically do the elf meditative trance deal.
Mm-hmm.
So they have significantly more time every day to do all
They also can't
things.
Be poisoned, I don't think.
Screw you.
They can see in the dark.
Night fight doesn't affect them. Because why not?
But let's dive into the first one of the big ones, which is the warrior path. So we're going to do, our whole next cast is actually going to be on this, but I just want to kind of touch on it really quickly. The Eldar have a pretty strong sense of guilt.
Strong sense?
Yeah.
Oh, they feel a little bad about this?
About breaking the sky and creating
Slaanesh. And also killing trillions of Eldar?
Yeah. So the warrior path was created by Aserman, and the idea is that they're going to turn themselves into the greatest warriors that have ever existed. And this ends up becoming, they eventually become aspect warriors.
I'm going to make it sound so dumb, even though I love Eldar. Effectively, Aserman said, we're going to punch our way back to salvation.
Yeah. And that's what they did. So that's the warrior path. And we're going to dive into that in our next cast pretty in depth.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us, and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with, yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore, 40klore. That's uncommongoods.com/40klore for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. The next one is the Grav Tank path, because the Eldar actually utilize Grav Tanks. The main one is the Falcon platform.
One? I would say occasionally.
Well, there's one platform that they base everything off of. Those pilots are also on a path to be a pilot.
Which is why a bunch of their bullshit rules have happened in past
editions. This is why they have tanks that fly and can move 12 inches and fire and fade.
And do spins. Do
incredible things. It's because they're the greatest pilots in history.
Which they should be.
And I'm gonna do a little diatribe in a minute on Eldar and the rules. But there's also the Path of the Seer, who's probably, I think, when we think on the tabletop of what Eldar are most known for.
I gotta get my chi together for this. Warlocks should have 10 attacks and a
psychic. Warlocks are the only Eldar that have incorrect rules.
Like, banana. They have two.
I know. They're the only ones, though. And we're going to dive into that in a little bit here. They are literally the only disappointment in the codexes over time of not being more badass.
You have to prove yourself over a long span of time to even be considered for the Path of the Seer.
Yeah. Oh, I agree.
You know what? Fine.
Just wait till you guys hear us talk about Alay Talk and some of their rules. The last one, though, that actually is important here is the Path of the Outcast. So as much as all these paths exist, they are pretty restrictive. And you could imagine like an adolescent Eldar being like, well, I don't want to
Which is so funny because you're like adolescent Eldar. And someone that's wildly older. Well,
years 100 to 300.
Yeah.
In my wild youth years, I watched 1,000 humans die of old age. But anyway, the Eldar, some Eldar on this who are newer to the path, or even some forever, will eventually leave the path. And they leave it. And when they do, it's to go kind of chase more of their basal instincts. And we'll get, don't worry, you know where we're going. We'll get there in a minute. This is called the Path of the Outcast. They all usually become rangers and some will become pathfinders.
This is a pretty big catch-all, though, because this includes pathfinders, rangers, which are continuing on with the betterment of Eldar society. But it also includes, I don't know, corsairs?
Yep,
hey, is a corsair good? Roll 2d6 and see what happens.
Exactly. The thing about most people on the Path of the Outcast is a lot of them do end up going back later. So once you've joined the Path of the Outcast, just like any other path, you may at some point go back to your craft world to rejoin the original path. In some of the older codexes, there actually are stories of some of these Eldar who joined the Path of the Outcast actually falling to chaos and then serving chaos gods. But I haven't seen that in any codex in recent memory. This is something I saw in the second, and I think I saw it in the fourth edition codex. So this all predates Y2K. So it might not be there.
I'm going to throw GW under the bus just for a second here, because we don't have enough middle ground here. And this might be because John and I debated politics for an hour before we started to go live.
Why not?
But in the recent, we used to have a blending in the old lore. And now we have Eldar, this Dark Eldar of this. And that's not how the lore has worked.
But that's because there was no Dark Eldar in the second
edition. Yeah, true.
That's why. The Dark Eldar were added
in the And the thing is that all of the people that are bad are Dark Eldar, and all the people that are good are Eldar. But there's not. The Corsairs are the great blend. Well,
yeah, and let's talk about the Corsairs, because the Corsairs actually disappeared from the game for a while, and then they brought them back.
They brought them back twice?
Yeah, they just came back again recently, and I couldn't be happier that they're back. Rules are great interesting. Models too. Yeah, great models. So Eldar Corsair is a fancy term for pirates, and they're called pirates because that's actually what they do. They have these small ships, and they're in little fleets, and they fly around the galaxy, invading ships, small colonies, doing small raids.
We'll go to this is again one of the things where Eldar are kind of dicks, because Eldar don't think it's a big deal when they take something from the lesser races, because why wouldn't I? You're a bug to me.
Exactly.
You're going to die before before my favorite program doesn't have any more seasons left. I don't care.
Yeah,
me taking some stuff from you, why? You're going to be dead before I notice.
When you read the rules for Corsairs, when you read the lore for Corsairs, you realize it's ripped pretty heavily off 17th century privateers. That's what they are. They're pirates / privateers, because they tend to still, most of the Corsair fleets still have a good amount of affinity, and even in some cases, direct.
They're attached to craft ones
a lot. Not always, but a lot of the time.
How about this? Most of the time.
They
have a pretty big, how about this? If something happened to their if their craft world, cough, cough, print cereal.
Yeah, they come back with a
quickly. You know what I mean?
They are
like, hey, we're our own thing. And then you're like, hey, you attack my craft world? No.
It's more for anyone who knows what a privateer was. They're much more privateer than they, in the sense that they haven't, and they operate independently, but if they get called back to the main craft world, they do. But that being said, not all do. The downside of Corsair is where it becomes a little bit, and there's some cool lore on this we can dive into another cast, mostly once we've covered the Drukhari. One of the big fears craft worlds have about their Corsair fleets that work around them is that Corsairs and Drukhari don't differ that much. And a Corsair can fall to the path of Drukhari.
And once you fall to the path of the Drukhari, and we'll cover this when we do Drukhari, it isn't just a fall in namesake. It is a fall in, oh, I have to do certain things to stay alive.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh shit, am I just doing evil so I don't die? And now, oh yeah, I've been alive for thousands of years and I'm fairly compromised now.
Yeah.
And this can happen, Elder. This is a fairly big rip into fantasy. I mean, specifically D&D. The fact that elves can just become drow.
Yeah. This is the Drukhari are the drow, and we'll cover that when we cover Drukhari. And the thing is that Kamara and the Drukhari also do represent a much more, what I would call, traditional mercenary element of the Corsairs. So, for example, if you were a Corsair and there was a mutiny on your ship and you found yourself stranded, you might find yourself in Kamora fighting in the fighting pits of Kamora as a witch. And you become a succubus. And Brad's laughing because I'm foreshadowing a couple episodes ahead, but that's where we're going. I'm going to drop it at that point.
I'm just saying, we're going to the end of the alphabet is all
exactly,
I'm saying.
Exactly, yeah.
So you're going to who those characters are. Yeah.
One thing we mentioned before, and we're going to dive into it again a bit further, is the path, like we just said, is not the end for most Eldar. Most Eldar work multi-path. So those of us who play D&D, Eldar multi-class. They multi-class real well. I mean, you can, theory, could have been on four or five paths before you die.
And a lot of these paths, again, are on the path of the Savant, the path of the service, the path of whatever. It's just whatever was the thing that you were doing. And you, again, have such a long life that you might be on multiple paths and you're expected to do this. Mm-hmm. And the whole time you are still expected to know the basics, and the basics are pretty hardcore about being.
That's actually a really key thing there. Eldar don't forget. So also, yes, I'm 7,000 years old.
They have eidetic memories.
The things I learned 4,000 years ago are still there. So the artisan, let's say I did Path of the Artisan and I did it for 1,000 years. Fast forward 3,000 years, I'm on the path of the warrior. I can still sculpt as good as I could when I was at the end of that path. That never goes away. So the next thing we want to dive into are the craft worlds themselves. And before we dive into this, I just want to make a little kind of side note about Eldar. There's a lot of people who've been playing the game for a while who don't play Eldar, who really don't like Eldar. And the main reason that they feel this way is the Eldar have been so epically broken in rules over the years. I mean, multiple times, game shifting to the point people don't want to play the game anymore because of the Eldar broken rules.
That's never happened, 10th edition.
And I'm going to defend the Eldar with one simple thing. It's not that the Eldar had broken rules. It's the Eldar were the only army whose rules matched their lore. And the reason why is some of the truth is, it's a fact. Some of the earlier rules writers for Eldar were also the lore writers for Eldar.
Yeah. And the thing is that, and this is the argument, and this has always been the argument for elves in any fantasy game and sci-fi game. If you do anything for 500 years plus,
you should be amazing at it.
Yeah, you should be better than ever. If I just, hey, what happens? On Wednesdays, I work the jab at John's house. Yeah. How long have you been doing that? 500 years. No one blocks my jab.
Yeah, it's a really damn good jab.
Yeah, you just like, of course you're the best at it because you've done it longer than anybody else has done.
And so I bring that up because as we cover the craft worlds, we'll probably make a few comments here and there about some incredibly broken elements of the craft worlds.
We're going to start with one.
Yeah, we're going to have a few in there. They're all pretty bad. So another quick note before you get into the craft worlds is Eldar players, a lot of them feel very strongly about the craft worlds, and so they will paint their entire armies to match the craft worlds. So as we go through a couple of them, I'm going to call out the color scheme you're going to see. You will see people with that color scheme quite a bit, and they will lean heavily into that
craft. But I want to give the quick note on this. Don't feel that you have to.
You do not. Yes, I don't. Mine are black and red.
I would say you get your own.
Mine are black and red.
Make your own. Mm-hmm. You know, do your own thing. I do not like when people say that you have to do anything.
No, not at all. But there are these craft worlds have deep and long lore, just like with when we covered Guard and in Space Marines too. People will say, okay, this is my Space Marine army. This is my Salamander army. This is my Ultramarine army. This is my army. Craft world have the same thing. So I just want to point that out to people so we know that. But anyway, let's start with the former poster boys of the Eldar, the BL-10.
I do like their color scheme probably the best because I can see it.
Yeah, it's all white with green highlights. And yeah, does that suck to paint? Oh, yeah, it sucks to paint. White's rough.
You know who's the biggest craft world dick? Sorry, BL-10 fans, but...
Oh, they're such dicks.
Wow, they hate everybody.
Oh, the BL-10. So let's talk about the BL-10. So the BL-10 are the warrior craft world. That's what they are.
When we talk about warrior craft world, we're not just talking that they mobilize for war. All the craft worlds can mobilize for war.
Yeah, of course.
BL-10 thinks that anybody that's not on the path of the warrior, the aspect shrines, they have more aspect shrines than anyone else does.
Yeah.
And like by not even close. It's just by a magnitude.
Yeah. It's a lot of path of warrior going on in BL-10.
And because of this, they take very seriously the fact that the only way that they're going to fix the galaxy is by punching it in the face.
Yeah. Oh, they want to kill everything. And what makes them a little bit funny to me, because they're dicks, is the BL-10 also view every race in the galaxy as less than them.
Not less than them, like wild.
Yeah, as not
important. Insignificant to them.
BL-10 are also fully confident that the Eldar are going to rise again and reclaim this. They do not think this is we can. Yeah. This is going to happen.
It's just a matter of time. Also, the BL-10 are the ones that actually have said, and this is a quote, one Eldar life is worth an infinite number.
Yeah, of non-Eldar lives.
Non-Eldar lives. They actually were saying it to humans, but they were just like...
Yeah, it's implied. The town know it also applies.
The town know it.
The town, they understand. The reason this gets to be funny is the BL-10, in all of their goals and stuff, also are trying to protect Eldar Crone Worlds.
And the best about this is you have no idea. There's no markings. There's no nothing.
Yeah, and Eldar Crone World fell 10,000 years ago. Every structure on it has been destroyed. You just found a planet that's decent distance from the sun, and we'll go ahead and colonize this. And out of the sky or webways you didn't know were there, arrive an entire BL-10 army who don't say a word to you, but just kill everybody and then leave.
And they're like, basically, we call it dibs.
Yeah.
And they're like, what is happening right now?
What happened? Where did everybody go?
Could just be, the best is they give no shits.
Oh, they could have
said they're not looking for fair fights. They just went, oh, a bunch of settlers are in this place.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're all dead.
Yeah, bye.
What even happened? You're like, I'm about to die, but I don't even know why.
One side note with them on that is that because they're obsessed with protecting Eldar Crone Worlds, they have a special hatred towards orcs because the Eldar, know the orcs better than any race knows the orcs. They know that once an orc infestation has begun, it's never going away. And so the Eldar are very aggressive whenever they sense an orc presence.
And I want to say that we talked a little bit about this last time because BL-10 will try to engage the orcs in space.
Yeah.
Because once orcs are on a planet, they ruin everything.
Oh, yeah. BL-10 and orcs are some epic battles because the BL-10 are basically hunting orcs down. And orcs don't really hunt stuff down. They just kind of mosey through a galaxy.
They're happy to fight. They don't even know why you're fighting, but they're right. Okay.
Yeah, this works for me.
I was looking for a fight anyways, so cool, but whatever.
The next craft world cover is Iandan. And in case you thought painting BL-10 was a pain in the ass, let's do yellow and blue.
I'd like you to point out that I ran all Iandan in 2001 and 2002 GT's Turn of the Circuits.
What were the rules, Brad?
I ran 2 10-man units of Wraithguard with Magon Ra and Eldrad with Uriel and Wilkin and 3 Wraith Lords. You're welcome.
What broken-ass rules did Iandan have then?
I got a 2-up rerollable save and an I forgot to mention, I also got a 5-up field of pain.
Okay. So in order to harm you, I had to hit you. I had to wound you. Then out of 6 options on a dice, you had to roll anything that wasn't a 1. If you rolled the 1, you could then try again. If you rolled the 1 twice,
I got
then
a
1/3 of the time you could make the damage go away.
I feel like this was fair and balanced.
I love Eldar. I really do. I just love Eldar.
What? That isn't even all the psychics I could cast on my
time. Oh, God.
Weirdly enough, I did really well with it.
Yeah, for some reason, they were really successful. Good God. So Iandan are actually interesting lore-wise because they were one of the largest craft worlds. And as we cover the Tyranid cast, Kraken hit them and wrecked them.
Well, again, Kraken didn't hit them. And this is where the Seers did not do good things for them.
Yeah, it's a species that can see into the future.
The craft world decided to power pivot into the middle of the Kraken.
Yeah.
High fleet. Not, we hit the edge, we'll fight and disengage.
We got all of it. We went
directly into the middle and just Queensberry rules did and tried to fight our way out.
But Prince Uriel came back. And everything's kind of okay.
Beat the shit out of the Nids.
They did. Yeah, they destroyed
Hyper and Kraken. They got wrecked, but also when you're talking about the death toll was catastrophic for the Nids.
One of the most important pieces historically about Iandan is that they were the ones who discovered the Waystones as a way to preserve the Elder. They created the Infinity Circuit.
They did save the species.
Yep.
Period.
This is a cool thing about the way Eldar functions. So we talk about like Space Marine chapters and some other ones. They actually don't communicate that well with each other. Like they'll do little bits of stuff. The Eldar are totally the opposite. When Iandan figured out a way to save their souls with the Waystones they immediately called every single Eldar.
Like, this is how you do spirit stones. Yeah. This is how you put them into constructs.
Yeah. Here's the blueprints. There's not a lot of intellectual property like filings that were being done here. It was like, everyone do this now.
Yeah. Because for Eldar lives are precious.
Exactly.
Like very, very precious. And again, dying race, even though there's billions of them, but they don't want their soul. They're, again, to reiterate, every time an Eldar dies, if you don't have the Infinity Circuit working, which is what is effectively the collective where Eldar souls go, and then you put them in spirit stones and these waystones where you can do it the same. Waystone, spirit stone is the same thing. But if you don't do that, your soul immediately goes to Slaanesh's dinner.
Yeah.
Like Slaanesh eats your. It's really eat
for
yourself.
Eternity, by the way.
Yeah,
yeah.
You get murdered every. You're like, if you watch The Good Place, is this where? Is this the flattening zone? We always used to like the flatten.
The Iandan. Another important thing about Iandan is that they're the most diplomatic of all the races. So they work with humanity. They work with the Tau. There's only two you can actually work with.
A lot. Yeah, I would say a lot of the stories, or especially originally. Of meetings with Eldar are because Iandan.
Yeah.
And again, I want to point this out. A craft world is not one ship.
Mm-hmm.
It is a...
It's a fleet of ships.
Of ships. And a big ship. It's not like one big ship and a bunch of fighters.
Well, we talked about it last time. It's the Quarians from Mass Effect. They stole the idea from Eldar, in all honesty.
Yeah.
The last piece I want to touch on Iandan is that they're very... While every Eldar craft world uses Wraith Constructs, the Iandan use them more than anyone because they took such heavy losses against the Tyranids. They have a lot of them. So they're also... You know, people who build Iandan armies, they tend to be very heavily in Wraiths.
They're also wildly skilled in it, too,
though. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Their Wraiths are better than others. And we're going to cover Wraiths in a couple casts because I love Wraiths. I think their lore on them is amazing. From there, though, we'll jump into Samhain.
I enjoy saying it wrong because it makes people send me messages. Well,
it's S-A-I-M, so Siam, and then Han, H-A-N-N. So I'd go with Samhain, but let's go Samhain. Who cares? Anyway, I'm out. So their colors are red with black highlights, and they just go fast. They go real fast.
Ricky Bobby.
Real fast. It's the Ricky Bobby of the craft.
You're the first to your last. Everybody knows that.
And the Samhain are interesting because there are actually a couple things about them that make them unique. First, they were one of the first craft worlds to grab all their people from the original Crone Worlds and boogie out. So they exist the furthest from the Eye of Terror and the most time with, like...
But they also spend the most time, besides Dark Eldar,
yeah,
doing the old Eldar
ways
of thinking, basically. Because they left before any of this shit happened. So they were already, this is how Eldar society works. We're going to continue
We'll keep doing that. And that's manifests itself in a very key way in the way they're structured. So Samhain aren't a kind of pyramid structure where the top leadership goes down. They're feudal.
They're clans.
Yeah.
They're straight up clans of guys.
Exactly.
They're effectively, this would be heresy.
Wild Riders what they're called.
They're effectively war bands.
They're a collection of war bands who sit within one big area. To this end, the other Eldar don't really like them very much.
It's not because they don't like them, they just don't trust them.
Yeah, it's because they're not reliable. It's not that they don't think of them oh, they're evil or bad. It's just that the way these war bands function, whereas most craft worlds, if you say to craft world, hey, we've got a danger, we've got a problem, come solve it, the craft world would then kind of unify itself behind it and come help. The challenge with Samhain is that some of them would, because some of the Wild Riders would come help, others would not.
They're step clans. They effectively, we're going to war, and then each clan decides whether they're going
to they feel like going to war with you.
And a lot of times you get 50%, sometimes you get 80%, but there's probably never a time. I'm going to say this and people are going to message me. Yeah. This is the five times that they've always come together.
Which is good. Message away.
But the thing is that you get some of them to come, and sometimes they just decide not to come.
Not to bother. And so to that end, this is why the other craft worlds, maybe when I said they don't like Samhain, that's an unfair assessment. It's more they don't rely on or really interact much with them because they're just not viewed as reliable to them.
Well, because also, again, we go back to that Eldar lives are precious.
Yep.
So Samhain goes, hey, you're in a losing war. If I show up, I will lose a bunch of Eldar lives. I'm not bothering to do that. And the thing is that they're proud warriors. They just don't want to do things that don't have basically Samhain goes, if I don't have an upside, I'm not showing up.
And that second part is really important with Samhain. Samhain are more obsessed with honor and dignity than any other craft world, which is another reason why the other craft worlds don't like them. They get Eldar in trouble a lot because Samhain.
It's not just honor and dignity. See, it's also pride.
It's a lot of pride. They will sit there and they will engage in battles and fights that they do not need to engage and fight in.
Because they want to show you that we're the best.
Off. Yeah. Instead of just
they're
blasting
huge
them. Yeah.
Show-offs.
Yeah. They're not big orbital bombardment craft world. They're much more get down and dirty.
There's
craft world.
Tons of stories where Samhain has legendary heroic stories about the crazy, John the Exarch of the Shining Spears tooled up this demon. But yeah, while you were doing that, 10 other things got killed because you could have just shot him in the face, but instead you decided to duel him.
Yeah.
And that happens a lot, actually. Or how about this? Not every time, but enough times where you're the Autarch said to do this. And you're like, yeah, but it'd be super sweet because I have a bard with me right now and he's writing my my story, my biography. I really would
and I need him to see what I'm about to do here. This is critical.
I'm going to look awesome. And he's like, yeah, but this is not what we're trying to do. Yeah, but I'm going to look sick.
Let's dive into my favorite though. So next we're going to jump into what is actually my favorite craft world. It's not because of the rules they used to have, which we're going to discuss in a
second.
Huge
liar. You know what? We're not going to discuss in a
second. Well, let me talk about that. So we'll do it's a lay talk. Let me just before you shit on them as they deserve from
the I'm going to shit on you for what you deserve on that.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
Anyway, the lay talk, they are a blue with yellow trim. I like them a lot. At their core, the Aletok are actually kind of a funny story. I'm holding Brad off because what he's going to tell you makes more sense if I give you a bit more of their lore. All right? The Aletok are kind of the most zealot of all the craft worlds about the path. They're extremely anal retentive about the path, which means a lot of the people leave. And you guys are nuts. So I would say the majority of the Aletok are actually on the path of the outcast. So
the whole craft world, basically.
Effectively, the whole craft world is on the path of the outcast. And so what they are is this craft world of Rangers, Pathfinders, Corsairs that are spreading themselves throughout the galaxy, trying to, you know, first off, find themselves, but they're not in, they don't hate their craft, they love their craft world. They're trying to improve the Eldar. So they're actually always, they're hunting down relics. They're hunting down changes in the warp, changes in the Imperium. Yeah, they are. And as a result of this, they end up partnering really well with my other favorite part of the Eldar, which is the Harlequins. So these two tend to go hand in hand. The Harlequins, because there are actually not a lot of Harlequins, are the keepers of the knowledge, and they tend to choose their battles very wisely. And if you're going to choose your battles wisely, the best thing to do is to work with the craft world that knows the galaxy better than any craft.
And this is a big thing that Elliot Tuck does that better than all of the other Eldar does, which is the galaxy is at war. Things are changing all the time. It isn't like, hey, we scouted this years and years ago. And this is an Eldar flaw because they're so long-lived. They go, well, what's over here? Well, obviously it's this. Well, no, man, it's been 300
years since you were last there. Yeah, that's not that long. Why would anything change? Why would anything be different in 300 years?
This is literally
what's wrong with you people.
Yeah. This sector has changed hands three times.
Yeah, like, oh, yeah, there are Eldar who were born before the Tau.
And now.
All right, so as a result of this, I'm going to bread shit in a second. The way the Eletok, wage war is actually hilarious, in which what they do is they scout deploy out all of their rangers and outcasts, snipe and pick apart the entire enemy, put the whole enemy in disarray, and then open a webway and Harlequins just come rushing out to finish the battle. This is the greatest way to wage war that probably exists in all of 40K. And I have run these lists.
Okay, this army was totally bullshit.
This army had a few rules, a couple rules here
John
and there.
John says that like this that, is going to be fun.
That you could interpret as being unfair.
So John says, oh, this is super fun, super awesome. Let me tell you what happened in the game. So you brought your army, you have it on your cart next to the table. And before you get to do anything, John goes, hey, I got to run through your list because I get to shoot you before you get to put your models on the board.
I have a shooting phase before the game.
Not just before the game, before you put models on the board. Oh, I forgot to mention that some of the things he can do is not just shoot you. He can tell you that some of your units aren't allowed to be deployed on the table. You're like, I'm not even playing the game yet. You're like, yeah, you're not allowed to use those guys.
Yeah.
Until when? Later in the game. Why? I misinformation them. I shot some people. Yeah. You're like, what is happening? Why are you getting to shoot me while I'm at home? Apparently, while you were painting your miniature at your house, John shot your sergeant.
Yeah, none of you can see the ear-to-ear grin I have right now. But it was
such trash.
It is so pretty. It is the – oh, this was, I think, of all the – we'll do a cast on the most broken rules. But I think of all the –
it wasn't even that broken. It was so irritating.
As all the lore to tabletop transitions.
Oh, it's perfect.
This was absolutely perfect.
Because writers did an amazing job.
They nailed it. How would the Eletok wage war? Well, the Eletok wouldn't just wage war by fighting you in the battlefront. They'd make it so you weren't even at the battle.
That's what they would do. On the way.
Yeah, on the way to the battle. They would disrupt it. So units that you were relying on to be at this battle are late. And so they wrote a rule for that. Did the rule mean I played with 2,000 points and you played with 1,100? Yep. Yeah,
it
did.
Trash.
Yeah, it totally did that. And that's complete bullshit.
Did you also get to shoot me before, again, on my cart?
Yeah.
Nothing's more annoying than getting a model shot. You know, I was going to hide this model. Well, you should have hit it better on your cart.
For those of us who, don't play at your level, Brad, one of the most stressful parts of the game is the deployment phase. So I'm there helping you with your deployment phase by reducing it. So you don't have to think about as many models you have to deploy.
You know what? You're a real humanitarian.
Yeah, Eletok lost this rule. However, in 8th edition, they did get the rule back of army-wide minus one to hit.
That they could
just
stack.
Army-wide. Yeah, you could stack. So they were.
You know what? I'd rather be shot than be minus four on a six-sided die.
Yeah. The Eletok were, and I say this because I played them in 8th edition for this reason. I could make it so you had to, on a six-sided dice, roll a seven to hit me. And I would put that model in front of your army and just say, well, I don't want to tell.
Your favorite craft
followed by me explaining
why people hate Eldar.
Yeah. And again, I didn't play them because of that. I actually played them because they actually played on the tabletop the way that they were supposed to play.
Okay, I'm going to give you props on this because one of my favorite things, and I'm not a Necron hater, but I do love the fact that they have dedicated their lives
to killing all the Necrons.
Yeah,
that's the Illetok's big one is they don't like the fact the Necrons are back and decided we're going to solve this problem. Them and the Harlequins are just hunting down Eldar, unawakened Eldar tomb worlds and ending them.
Necrons, right? But the thing is that the best part about this is they love to find unawakened tomb worlds and just ruin them.
And just go in there and blow them up completely. And then just, but also even the ones who are awakening, they just go there and F with them.
My thing is, in my mind, they bomb the places and just go, you should have known that you already lost.
Yeah.
Beat you 65 million years ago,
later, bitch. What's up now?
I didn't forget.
Yeah, yeah. You know who hasn't been asleep the whole time? This guy. that is their, by one of their key purposes in the world is defeating Slaanesh and the Necrons. And they will achieve those two by shooting the Necrons before they can deploy. Give me my fun rules back, GW. All right. Now, as we talked about my favorite craft world who did have broken rules, now we're talking about Brad's favorite craft world, who've also had some broken-ass rules, Brad. But we'll talk about the Ulthwei. So real quick, who the Ulthwei are. They are a black, aren't they? Wear black with white trim. They are the largest craft world by a wide margin. I believe they were even larger than Iandan before Iandan fell. They've always been the biggest.
They are also the new poster child for... Yes. When you look at Eldar, when you look at the paint schemes, when you look at what GW promotes, Ulthwei is now the go-to Eldar craft world.
Ulthwei are, there's a lot of reasons behind that, largely Yunari based, but the Ulthwei craft world's a little bit weird because
I would have just glossed this over.
Nope.
You know what?
I'm never glossing over the dumb shit.
You know, you did this in the last one. Somehow the Eye of Terror, the hole in space that connects to the Imperium, literally a gate to hell. Mm-hmm. Has a gravity well.
Yeah. None of us never explained, just has it.
And
the Ulthwei entire craft world,
which is Marta.
The giant fleet of ships is stuck in this gravity well and can't escape it.
Because they leave all the time. So it doesn't even matter the webway. They leave consistently.
Yeah.
Ulthwei cruises to so many different places all the time. Eldrad, while my favorite Eldar character by a mile, sticks his fingers where they shouldn't be consistently.
Always. It's all over the galaxy. So Ulthwei leaves this thing all the time. But if you read the codexes, it says the Ulthwei craft worlds are stuck in the orbit of the Eye of Terror.
They are so not.
Until they don't, unless they need to go somewhere
else. Yeah, unless they need to go literally anywhere. Yeah. Like, oh no, we're stuck in this gravity well. Hey, we're out of milk. Yeah, I'll just drive there right now. Yeah,
I might have to get milk. I'll be right back, guys. Like, why don't we all just leave?
Yeah, when that guy leaves, why don't we go that way with him?
No. So the flip side, though, of this whole thing about being stuck next to the Eye of Terror is as a result, it actually makes the Ulthwei the most psychically gifted of all the Eldar races. Because being this close to the Immaterium. Well,
it's both. Yeah. So it promotes, they've already have a huge psychic presence. We've already talked about all Eldar have a psychic presence. Mm-hmm. It increases their psychic potential, but it also means that they have to constantly be on guard for the fact of corruption. Yep. So they have some of the most gifted psychers in the galaxy, probably the most gifted psychers in the galaxy.
The Ulthwei are the most powerful non-chaos psychic in the galaxy.
Yeah, and they have the most power that's the most controlled. Yep. And they do some pretty badass shit, to be honest.
Oh, they're incredible. So the funny thing about this, they actually have too many psychers to the point where they actually have the least amount of aspect wars. So they're the largest craft world, but they actually have the least amount of aspect wars because they're all psychers. So everyone's path of seer.
Well, because of that though, effectively, if you're Ted, well, sorry, Ted, you've now had to up your guardian game.
Yeah. And so what they did was they flipped their guardians around a little bit. Whereas everyone has guardians and all their guardians are militia, the Ulthwei guardians are called black guardians because the black armor. And these guys in the lore are badass.
They've been badass on the table too. 8th edition.
Oh, 7th.
The black guardians came in. But one of the biggest things about the black guardians is The Black Guardians aren't just badass because they're awesome Guardians. The Black Guardians are badass because they work hand in hand with the Seers, Warlocks, Farseers. So they're basically shooting into the future effectively.
Yeah.
Like, hey, everyone in this unit should shoot right there. There's nobody there. There will be.
Yeah. The Black Guardians are famous for that, where they'll pop out of a webway, immediately open fire just as an enemy comes around a corner into that fire.
And then they leave.
And then walk right back through that webway.
Yep.
And it's like, did they just, like, they're the ninjas.
And they've had some crazy rules in the game, but if they made the lore, you would have people throw stuff at you.
Yeah. The Black Guardian rules are annoying.
Yeah. Black Guardians in the lore legitimately show up and shoot you and then immediately leave.
Yeah,
so you get to do absolutely nothing.
They are the Black Ulthway and the Black Guardians made Abaddon kind of their bitch a couple times.
Around the Eye of Terror.
Yeah, Abaddon hates Eldred.
Oh, like
he hates the Emperor the most. Number two might be Eldred.
Yeah, he's got a poster that he throws darts at.
Yeah, it is pretty rough. And this is what makes the Ulthway amazing, is that Ulthway, because they've got so many psychers, and they've got these special Black Guardians, they wage war a little bit differently than everybody else because they have so much foresight. Now, does that foresight fall apart at the most key elements possible when writing the lore of 40K? Yep, always does. Good job, Eldred. But aside from that problem, they do use them in combat quite a bit, and the Ulthway are incredible at this. Add to that, the Ulthway spend most of their time fighting chaos because of their location. They may be
not just because of location. Eldred is committed to, which is one of the many reasons why I love my do-gooder characters, by the way.
You do. Mm-hmm.
Eldred is committed to righting the wrongs of the sins of Eldar. You know what I mean? He wants to make things happen. He is really willing to work with other races. He just does a shitty job of it.
Well, let's talk about Eldred because Brad loves himself.
I love Eldred.
I just want to kind of hit, you know, in the US we call it a resume, the rest of the world you call it their CV. Let's just go through some of the things Eldred's done in the lore.
We're gonna bring the bad stuff.
We'll start with the bad one. The dumb one was, yeah, he did meet with Fulgrim to tell Fulgrim not to prevent Horus turning to heresy.
But Fulgrim had already
after Fulgrim was had returned to the chaos. So that
he might as well have had tentacles on him.
Exactly. So not his best work. But that is Eldred's in. I believe that's the first book of the entire Horus Heresy. Eldred's in. So he's over 10,000 years old. However, we'll cover in a future cast a secret organization called the Cabal, who were a hidden force in the galaxy that we're not really sure if they're for good or for evil.
They were not.
But anyway, Eldred killed almost every single one of them. He hunted them down and killed almost all of them. Eldred was involved in the War of Armageddon, kind of started it. That's a side note.
Maybe, but
you know. Maybe sort of started it, possibly.
He was really trying to help out.
Himself.
Well, yeah.
Definitely it was not.
Like in KOTOR.
He was not helping the members, the people who live in Armageddon.
Like when Revan, you know, invaded the Republic to get them ready for things, you know, that's how it happens.
It's one way of interpreting it. Yeah. It's one way of interpreting it. He also fought and defeated Abaddon numerous occasions.
He also died and they got.
That's my favorite part. At one point, Eldred in the lore died. I think it was sixth edition.
He sacrifices himself into a Blackstone fortress.
In fifth or sixth edition, I actually want to tell the story better. In one of the codexes, Eldred just dies in the codex.
Straight up.
Not a Black Library book.
No, I'm just saying, dead. In the Blackstone, he literally sacrifices himself into a Blackstone fortress. And the very next codex, they don't even address it. They're just like, hey, what's up? It's Eldred.
Yeah, Eldred's right there. And people are like, well, didn't he die? And you're like, no.
What are you talking about?
Read the codex.
They literally do the Austin Powers. That's not my bag, baby.
It's not my bag at all. Like, I don't know what you're talking about.
It says this is my bag, baby.
Your sixth edition codex, he died. I may be getting these editions wrong, so if I'm wrong, guys, jump into Discord and tell me, but I'm 90%. It's a sixth edition codex, he dies. And then seventh edition codex, he's just not dead anymore. Not comes back to life, he's just no longer, he's just not, it never happened.
Yeah, because they effectively went, oh, this guy's the most popular Eldar character by a landslide.
And he's also really critical to the lore. So not only does he not die, but then in the eighth edition codex, he awakens a new god.
The God of Death, the God of Death. And also he is then semi-retcon Abaddon style, effectively responsible for about 100 different huge 40K events by him Kaiser Soze-ing shit in the background.
Eldred, just whenever Eldred appears in the lore, it's important. That's the best way to explain it.
Well, also, one of the biggest things about when Eldred shows up, shit's going down.
Yeah.
You're happy that Eldred showed up. And also, I should load every gun I own because nothing ever good happens when you show up.
He isn't going trading missions. So.
No.
I think talking about Eldar and the Ulthway is a really good transition to talking about the last thing we're going to cover here, which is Eldar Psykers. So really, of all the weaponry the Eldar bring to bear on the battlefront, the most important piece for them is their Psykers. That's their greatest asset by a long way.
100%. Yeah. The thing is that Eldar work hand in hand with their Psykers, and we're talking either frontline, planning, and everything else with it. The Eldar don't function without their Psykers. Most of their battle tactics require Psykers. I mean, you could say, their tanks and stuff like that, but some of their tanks are piloted by Psykers.
Yeah. I mean,
so it's a big deal in this because we have like so many things that happen that don't happen if Psykers don't exist or aren't there for the Eldar because of the fact that they literally go, hey, how does the shoot? We just talked about the Black Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
Black Guardians do not work if Seers and specifically Warlocks.
Yeah, I think the way I like to explain it is that the Eldar are, the term we use a lot is a glass cannon. Okay. And then we use that term a lot because they hit you like a cannon, but they're as brittle as glass. So the only way the Eldar can be successful is to make sure that there is no counterattack. And they do this with two things. One, their weapons, and we're going to cover it in our fourth cast on Eldar, their weapons hit hard. Like Eldar weaponry and Eldar, also we'll cover the next cast with Aspect Warriors, Eldar hit hard. So they can eliminate you on the first hit. But then what the Psykers do is they add a little bit to that hit.
They cheat.
Yeah, they make your hit even harder, but also they make the counterattack almost non-existent.
They obfuscate you. They confuse the enemy.
Mm-hmm.
They make the enemy slower. They make you faster. They legitimately buff. They buff and debuff. If you played any computer game or any Xbox or whatever, they buff and debuff. They legitimately throw down buffs on your units, put debuffs on your enemy units, but also they look into the future so you can kill things or you can get out of the way. And they do this for squadrons. It's not like Obi-Wan Kenobi weaving.
Yep.
It's a, hey, I've got a squadron of 20 guys and I tell everybody, not even just tell them, I subtly manipulate everybody to lean slightly to the left and no one gets
shot. So there are four elements to the Eldar. We have the Spirit Seer, the Bone Singer, the Warlock, and the Far Seer. The Bone Singer is just the...
He's the custodian.
It's a construction. They're called bone singers. So they actually sing into the warp and they create the wraith bone.
In the computer games, they're the people that are healing the stuff.
Yeah, they build them. Yeah. The next one are the spirit seers, who actually are newer to the game. They got added in, I think, fourth or sixth edition.
They're in charge of leading specifically units of wraith constructs.
Which originally was actually the warlocks. So in second edition, it was the warlocks. So they added them in later. But the last two are the ones that are actually really critical. The first is the one that, And I genuinely mean this, and Brad will back me up on this. The only unit in the entirety of the Eldar Codex that has not lived up to its lore at any point is the Warlock.
Warlocks should be ruining people. Yeah. And the thing about this is Warlocks have to be accomplished warriors before they go into the path of the seer.
Yeah, a Warlock is they have completed a path of war. So they are an aspect warrior, who we're going to talk about in the next cast. They are an aspect warrior who have all the knowledge of an aspect warrior and also have the psychic power.
But in the game,
Jesus.
In the game, in the lore, warlocks are frontline fighters that are legitimately bending time and space, basically, to make things happen. They are the ones that are putting those debuffs and buffing your units, and they are fighting with you right in the, they are legitimately right there. Yeah, the Warlock right is there, with
and,
me.
And they're making you move faster. They're helping you hit better. They're also slowing down your enemy or making your enemy more susceptible to weaponry. They are a nightmare on the tabletop. And I'm gonna call it right now. This is the number one reason I don't like 10th edition is what they did to Warlocks.
Yeah. The thing is that Warlocks used to have dual powers because mm-hmm. everything that they know can be used.
They used to select their damn power, which was just better. It was a better system.
But even when they selected, though, every power had two sets.
Yeah.
All Warlocks can give you a boon.
Yep.
Or put a debuff on another unit.
Conceal, reveal.
Conceal, reveal. Yeah. Enhance. You know what I mean?
Did you ever use reveal?
No.
Yeah, as the Alatok player. Me neither. But a conceal is pretty fun. Now I'm -2 to hit.
Yeah. I mean, back in the day, it was a big deal. But the thing is like, you know, enhanced drain, things of that nature. Mm-hmm. All of these powers are fantastically lore accurate, though.
Yeah.
Because the Warlocks are the ones that are powering the Guardian. They just work with.
They would, as a Striking a Scorpion recover next one, or Howling Banshee would charge in, they would make it so that their weapons were actually hitting even harder. Or they would allow your Dire Avengers, even just your Guardians,
to
make it so the opponent couldn't get cover. So all the shots would just crest just over the lip of the.
The Warlocks are the reason that the Eldar War Machine, for me.
Yeah.
And people can argue this. I feel that the Warlocks are the. One of the main cogs in the Eldar War Machine.
Well, you know, and this is an interesting thing, but this is, I think, where the tabletop does fail them a little bit, because we're going to cover next thing with them as a Farseer. So in the lore, Warlocks, because they're a former warrior, accompany the Eldar warriors, whatever, so, you know,
battle. They're ninjas, basically.
At every conflict. The Farseer, who's, I think, on the tabletop, the better known and the more recognized in the power, is the inverse of this. The Farseer should never be at combat unless the craft world itself is under attack. Because there's not a lot of Farseers. They're the most powerful psychers that a craft world even has. And they're actually steering the craft world. Their job is to sit in this special little like forest in the middle of the craft world. And then in a meditative state, mentally, they reach out to the entire craft world and drive it and direct it through stuff.
They drive day-to-day things.
Yep.
The Autarch is in charge of all war. Everything he says, period. Yeah, this is what's happening in fights.
Because he's path of command.
Right.
Yep.
The Farseer is more in charge of your day-to-day everything. Yeah.
The Farseer determines where the craft world is.
Yeah, well, it's not even just where
it's stuck in the gravity well of the Eye of Terror, in which case we can't fix everything, guys.
But those guys change how Eldar life happens. They mm-hmm. guide everything that happens, what's going on. And in the game, they show up in your face and you're like, no.
Yeah. Actually, I do laugh about this. Other thing about the Farseer is with that element, as bad as the Warlocks are the tabletop, I just realized as we're saying this, the Farseer might actually be worse. And it's only just because you couldn't write these rules. The Warlock should be this incredible warrior using psychic powers and jacking you up. Farseers in the lore are almost deity level in combat. You cannot touch them.
In the original Eldritch Stell Ogiv people that played the game.
We don't have to discuss Eldritch Storm when the Codex first came out in 9th edition. It's not important that I could start the game with 30 mortal wounds to my opponent that they had. No save against. There was no way to prevent it, no way to stop it, because I actually could also move. And so there was just a quick side note, early 9th edition, there was a way with Eldar thanks to pre-game moves, if you went first, do upwards of 30 mortal wounds to your opponent.
It was an area.
Within six inches of a point. You actually could remove, I think my record was a third of an opponent's army.
Because people were not super excited about it.
Yeah, they got rid of the rule, weirdly. Eldar the Eldar do this a lot where someone writes a rule for them, and then I'm sure someone at GW says, that feels overpowered. The person says, well, look, in the lore, it makes sense. And then someone else at GW says, well, I guess, yeah, that's fair. 7 billion emails later, all right, guys, we're not doing that again. Fast forward 6 months, I totally do it again. But back to Farseers. Yeah, Farseers, their main purpose isn't actually combat. Their main purpose is keeping
is the guiding.
Yeah, it's guiding the entire.
I'd say the spiritual, but they're not really religious.
The difference is the path of command makes an autarch. Autarchs, they're in charge, but they're in charge of small scale stuff. They're in charge of this battle, that battle, etc. The Farseer is in charge of the craft world.
They're in charge of putting furthering civilization on.
Yep.
What is the best thing for everyone?
And where the Farseer is, the one thing I want to talk about from a lore standpoint, because people hear it mentioned, and I want to kind of, it's one of these, there's a lot of stuff in GW lore that's like two sentences somewhere that ends up being really important. This is the crystallization of a Farseer, which is...
it's not even just the crystallization. It's the crystal forest.
Well, that's what happens. So you'll hear people reference every now and then, like Eldred, for example, is like, basically almost like, it's just like brushed crystals off his body as they're forming. The way that a Farseer steers a craft world, they actually go to what is this forest in the middle of the craft world.
It's Avatar. It's literally Avatar. The movie Avatar, when they go to the...
Brad's going to make you mad. I haven't seen it.
What kind of nerd are you?
Because I saw Dances with Wolves. I'll have to watch it again with CGI.
It's Dances with Wolves sci-fi, damn it.
It did not look good.
You know what? If you can't imagine Kevin Costner as a 9-foot-tall blue guy,
One of them's a better actor. Although Costner got weird. That's a side note. Anyway, that's a side note for another day. But anyway, they have a forest of crystalline trees that are all there. And what these crystal trees actually are
Avatar.
Yeah, fine. Probably. They're prior. As the Farseer sits in this forest and meditates, their body effectively just stops functioning, just their mind. And for whatever reason, in doing so, their body begins to crystallize. They never explain why, and I'm glad they don't, because in traditional GW fashion, if they tried to explain it, it would probably be shit. So the body turns to crystal, and eventually the way that Farseers die is they actually turn into these crystals that, much like a spirit stone, traps their soul. But it's not really necessarily a bad thing, because their soul being there, the other Farseers who are now alive and there can commune with the Farseers from before. So we're in the 41st millennia. You could be on a craft world as their Farseer, and you're not just leading the craft world, but you're also getting the influence of 30, 40, 50, hundreds of Farseers who've come before you, who can tell you and impart their knowledge to you at all times. So
it's a huge deal, because again, remember, the Eldar don't forget things.
Yep.
So you're getting this full lifespan of all the Farseers that have come before you and this knowledge.
Oh, because one thing I forgot to mention. Sorry, that's on me, guys. When we talk about farsight within the Eldar, it's not that they can see into the future. It's actually that they can run calculations based on the facts that exist and the knowledge they have to predict the future almost perfectly. Well, just like the Necrons do
with computers.
Yeah, but the difference is with the Necrons and the Eldar is the Eldar have much more knowledge to base it off of, where the Necrons are just doing math really quickly.
The Eldar actually see basically all the possible
outcomes. Yeah, because they have all the information. The Eldar have the access to know everything that's ever, because the Necrons have been asleep for 60-something million years. The Eldar have not, right. And they're aware of everything. So it's a little side note there to that. But anyway, we've been going on for a while here, so I think this is a good time to kind of cut it. So in the next cast, we're going to dive into Brad fanboying hard, which is going to be the Aspect Warriors. This is basically the reason that Brad plays Eldar, is because of the Aspect Warriors.
They're awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to dive into that. But until then, we'll see you guys next week. This has been John Barsotti and Brad Chester.
The Scout.